Welcome to Bedford County Speaks, a weekly public affairs program that introduces you to the work, lives, and lifestyles in Bedford County. Today's program over News Talk 1310 WBFD is hosted by Lloyd Roach. Bedford County Speaks is heard every Saturday at this time. Now let's join Lloyd for this week's discussion on Bedford County Speaks.
Thank you, Matt DeFazio, and good morning to you. Welcome to Bedford County Speaks. Today's program is brought to you as a public service by DestinationDelco.com. Just a few miles to the east of us, you can find the wonders of historic Delaware County and the Brandywine Valley. To learn more, visit DestinationDelco.com. I'll be right back to introduce my guests when Congressman Bill Schuster joins us from the 9th District as Bedford County Speaks continues.
DestinationDelco.com, a new way to experience Delaware County. Destination Delco, from Philly to the Brandywine, we have the Crossroads, Riverside, Main Streets, Main Line, and the Brandywine. 5 different ways to experience Delaware County. Check us out at DestinationDelco.com. Be sure to listen to Bedford County Speaks Saturdays at 8:30 a.m. just before Rush on News Talk 1310 WBFD.
It's not every day you get to talk to a sitting congressman, especially when the sitting congressman comes to you. So, Congressman Schuster, I want to thank you very much for joining us, little old folks here in Bedford County. It's great to have you. But I understand that you know something about Bedford County.
Well,
you were like raised here.
Yeah, absolutely, Lloyd. Thanks for having me on here, and I try my best to get back here to talk to the folks face to face as often as we can. So my duties in Washington call me to be down there, but I certainly love to come back to Bedford County. This is where I grew up, and in fact, this interview is taking place in Mark Zanka or Zanka Solutions' his offices here in Bedford, and it's the managing director of this organization is Jeff Markle. For those in Bedford County, especially Everett, Mark Zanka and I played football together, and Jeff Markle and I played football and baseball together. So, again, this is where I grew up. Not a native from here, but my family has owned a farm in Bedford County. This year will be the 51st year celebrating that ownership of the farm, and I'm 54. So, you know, my whole life, this has really been home for me.
One of the things I've learned since I arrived in Bedford County 18 months ago is if you haven't been here for 7 or 8 generations, you're really not from this area. I mean,
there are some people that believe that, but you know, my family being here for 51 years, and it is today's society. There's many people that have moved in and out of Bedford County. It's becoming, and we're seeing the growth of Washington, Baltimore, coming up this way. We're seeing more and more folks that are locating here. But you know, it's a great place to be. People are warm and friendly, and again, my family. Having a farm for 51, we're starting to think our roots are pretty deep here in Bedford County.
I own some businesses here in Pennsylvania, and I must tell you that my wife and I, when we decided to retire, looked all over the state, and we were trying to find some place that kind of wasn't burned out, has been, whatever. You find a lot of that up in northeastern Pennsylvania, not pejoratively, but that's the way it is. And when we found Bedford County, we just couldn't believe it. I mean, it's almost like an oasis when you come down Route 220 and you open up into this absolutely lovely town in this fabulous county. I mean, we have enjoyed ourselves immensely since we've been here. So you should be proud to represent this area. It's just fantastic. Right? We just love it.
Well, we're very proud and glad to hear you say that because I believe the same. And as I mentioned a little earlier, when you see the growth that's coming in from Washington, Baltimore, and we're close to Pittsburgh, in the next 20 years, this is going to be the exurbs of these metropolitan areas. It's a place where you can come. It's safe. It's clean. It's beautiful. The history here, the natural resources, the natural beauty here, the fact that we have the Bedford Springs Hotel back in operation and thriving, I think really makes this place a spectacular place to come and to live and to work. And I think over the next years, because of the improvement in the transportation system here, that's another big draw. You can get to and from Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Pittsburgh in around 2 hours, which I think is a great draw for the area.
What surprised me was when I moved here from the Philadelphia area. It takes less time to get to D.C. than it does to Philadelphia. And I didn't understand the geography until you looked at a map and see how west everything is.
Right.
So when you go down that beautiful highway, 70 down into the Beltway, it's just phenomenal.
Right.
Well, Congressman Schuster, you've obviously qualified yourself as a local boy. But I understand that here, when you were living in Everett, it was a little different. You said that the rebuilding of the Bedford Springs and the and the improvements made around Everett and the highways, for example, have really changed the last several years. Can you tell us a little bit about that, the last 25, 30 years?
Sure.
What's going on?
I think you look at just the road system connecting. We always had the Pennsylvania Turnpike going through, but being a toll road, the locals didn't use it. And so when they connected Breezewood to Bedford, it's four-lane highway. That was a big improvement. And I-99 that connects the Pennsylvania Turnpike to I-80 in the north makes that highway important draw for people to come here to locate their businesses. REI is one that's been here in Bedford County, several others. So I think those are important improvements. The other thing that has been now for, I guess, almost 10 years, Bedford Springs has been back in action. When I was a kid in the 60s and the 70s, Bedford Springs was doing all right, fell on some hard times, flooding, and then it closed up for a number of years. But through the efforts of Senator Jubilier, through the efforts of my father, and I'm proud to say through my efforts, we were able to get the dollars to reopen the Bedford Springs. One of my most proud accomplishments is that the banks would come to the Bedford Springs and say, you can't have a significant secondary road running through the middle of a luxury resort hotel. And so they came to me and asked if there was possible to get the federal dollars to redirect the road. And I was able to find the $10 million that was the impetus to redirect the road. And once the banks saw they were going to take that significant secondary road out of the middle of the resort, they were able to secure the dollars and fund the rehabilitation of the Bedford Springs.
Well, I want you to know, of course, being an outsider, not too familiar with this area as yet, the first time I ever saw that, I gave it a name. I call it the Schuster Canyon. And every time I drove by it, I just think, in fact, the other day, I had the opportunity to meet Brett Schoenfield, who was the new general manager of the Bedford Springs. And he mentioned something to me, which was very encouraging. He said the hotel, and since he's been in charge just a few months, is going to start a real effort to really integrate with the town and county of Bedford. And this is very unusual for a large resort.
Sure.
Usually they want to bring people from far away with the helicopters and the corporate jets, and you know, the little town next door will fend it for its own. But he made it clear to me that he really, really wants to do something to ingratiate himself. And that's just wonderful news.
I mean, well, it's great news. And Mark Langdale, who was the original owner that they brought the dollars here to rehabilitate the hotel and bring it back to life, we had discussions about this early on, is that that's the long-term goal, is to incorporate Bedford, the town, the village of Bedford, into the resort. And for years, I've been to the Greenbrier, and I've been to the Homestead, and I've been to Nemacolin Woodlands, which happens to be my district also. They have beautiful resort hotels, but they just don't have the amenities that the small town of Bedford could bring to add to the hotel. Now we've had new restaurants open up here in Bedford, and the shops, you walk up down the streets, specialty shops. So I think it's really positive, and I understand we're going to build a bike path or a walking trail that's going to connect the Bedford Springs Hotel to the town of Bedford. I think all those things really add to it, and I've been a big supporter and proponent of the Springs. I've tried to bring groups from Washington up here, and every single time they've come up here, they said they didn't know it was here, and one of the highlights, they said, was to be in the town of Bedford, the historic significance of Bedford, and of course, all the shops and restaurants and things that are popping up here, so it's just tremendous for the area.
You should see the trail. It looks like the Pennsylvania Turnpike. They're taking a very big ditch.
Right.
They're going to make it smaller, but it's going to be really terrific.
Yep.
In fact, just that physical connection, being one who is interested in roads like you are, will have obviously a direct impact, because you're going to be able to walk without getting run over down to the Bedford Springs from Bedford.
Or ride a bike. That's another mode of transportation.
Right. Or ride a bike. Let's just move on to something else here. I think, like all citizens of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania who have obviously watched their legislators and their state senators and their state reps and their congressmen and their senators, sometimes we feel like we're a little out of it. You know, we're here and kind of you're there. Can you give us a little bit of a civics lesson of how a congressman is the spokesperson for the people in Washington?
Sure. You know, I think that our form of government is the best form of a government, a republic, where we are able to elect representatives that go to Washington to represent us and to be trustees of the people. And I think it's important. The three things that I think that I owe the people of the 9th Congressional District, first and foremost, is I know firmly and I believe every day I get up, I know I work for the people of the 9th Congressional District, and I know that's my job. And every 2 years, they can hire me or fire me. And I'm well aware of that. But so I always keep that in the forefront of my mind, who I work for, and I know who I work for. But I also think that what I owe the people of the 9th District, I think every representative in Congress, every representative in any state legislature owes people really three things. They owe them their hard work, to go out every day and work hard and try to do what's right. Second thing is to listen to the people, just hear, to get a sense of what people are talking about, what's important to them back home in their districts and in their state. Third and most importantly is my judgment. With that hard work, learning about things, listening to people, and then applying it all to the policies that we pass in Washington, to use my judgment on behalf of the people, the 705,000 people in the 9th District, to make a decision on how to vote on pieces of legislation. You can't always please all of the people with your votes, but you try to do the best you can to put policies in place that uphold our Constitution, but also are good for the people of the 9th District of Pennsylvania and the United States of America. And so going through that process every day, it's frustrating. And I know people back here at home and people across America, they're frustrated because they've seen the Congress over the last several years not work very well. And it's still, we're having our bumps and bruises moving forward, even with a Congress with Republican majorities in both House and Senate. But the Founding Fathers set it up in such a way that there would have to come together, House and the Senate, work with the administration or the executive to pass laws, to make them laws. And I think what you see now is, although we have 54 votes in the Senate, it takes 60 to make things move in the Senate. So we've got to pick up 6 Democratic votes. The House, we've got the majority, and we've been able to pass some significant legislation. But even in our party, we have some differences of agreement. And so we've tried to figure that out best and move things forward in a positive direction. As I like to tell people, in the 230 years since this republic has existed, pretty sure that you can bet a lot of money that no member of Congress has ever walked away from a piece of legislation passed and saying, this is perfect, this is 100%. It's just not the way the Founding Fathers set up our government to be, is to work back and forth and come up with a consensus that we can pass something that's positive, that moves the ball forward, and we live and fight another day in Congress to continue to move in the right direction.
A lot of people feel that Congress, and I guess all the members of the Senate, are really out there to get free stuff for the citizens. And I know you don't feel that yourself.
No.
And I think there's more to government than going and say, well, we can get you free this or benefit that and
right.
So forth. I mean, I just think in my own lifetime, back 40 or 50 years ago, when I first started voting, they never discussed that. It was about larger issues.
Right.
So do you see any return to this, or do you, I mean, it just seems like we've gotten this big spiral of,
sure,
what can we give you today?
Right.
You
know? Yeah, I think that has happened, and I agree with you. I don't believe the government's role is to do everything for the people. It's to put policies out there that will allow the individual, that allow families, that allow businesses to be prosperous, get the government out of their way. On the same token, though, if there is something out there that needs to be done that's in the public interest, and I'm talking about the bigger, broader issues, if government imposes something on the states or on communities, the federal government, that is, then the federal government has an obligation to contribute, to help move that forward, to pay for a piece of it, especially when they're putting this mandates on people. So I'm all in favor of reducing the mandates. Mandates like we see in education today. What's good in Pennsylvania doesn't necessarily work in Oregon. So if we're going to let our taxpayer dollars be in the system, let the people of Pennsylvania and let the local folks decide how to run that thing, because I think they can get more out of that dollar, stretch that dollar in a positive way if they're doing it here locally.
You're listening to Bedford County Speaks today. It's our guest, Congressman Bill Schuster from the 9th District. And when we return, we're going to dig into a little bit of discussion about what the congressman, I think, really likes to work on. That's the transportation issues when Bedford County Speaks continues.
DestinationDelco.com, a new way to experience Delaware County. Destination Delco, from Philly to the Brandywine, we have the Crossroads, Riverside, Main Streets, Main Line, and the Brandywine. 5 different ways to experience Delaware County. Check us out at DestinationDelco.com. Be sure to listen to Bedford County Speaks, Saturdays at 8:30 a.m., just before Rush, on News Talk 1310 WBFD.
Now, let's head back to today's Bedford County Speaks.
And you're listening to Bedford County Speaks. My name is Lloyd Roach. Today is my guest, Congressman Bill Schuster of the 9th District. And today's program is brought to you by DestinationDelco.com. If you'd like to learn more about the wonders of Delaware County and the Brandywine Valley, just visit this site, DestinationDelco.com. Congressman Schuster, I don't think there's anybody in the Commonwealth, and certainly not in your district, that is in some way not impacted by transportation of some form, whether they're in an ox cart or riding a horse, and not too many people do that anymore, but obviously driving their automobile and maybe even riding the Amtrak train, which comes through the middle of your district. There has been a great deal of discussion about what is better, big roads, small roads, rail, rail versus roads, roads and rail versus urban areas, roads and rail versus not so urban areas or even rural areas like the majority of Bedford County. Is there a plan out there? I mean, does anybody actually have this written on the wall someplace of what they're going to do first? I mean, every time we watch the news on television, it seems like they make up a new idea every minute. So being the expert in this, I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on this.
Sure. Well, again, let me go back to the founding of this nation. If you ask about a plan, and I think our founding fathers, they had a plan. Though there were 13 states, they realized the Articles of Confederation failed for a number of reasons, but really the breaking point was a transportation issue. Maryland and Virginia could not come to terms on a treaty to navigate the Potomac River to get to western Pennsylvania and over to the Ohio Territory, which was rich in resources, western Pennsylvania, Ohio. They realized that if they weren't able to move commerce, they wouldn't be prosperous, and if they weren't able to connect this country, we would not be a nation. We'd just be a group of loosely associated states. So they went back to the drawing board, and they came up with the Constitution we know today. Article 1, Section 8 talks about the three primary purposes of government, the responsibilities, and that is for the common defense, interstate commerce, to regulate it, promote it, and to establish post roads, because that was the communications of the day, you know, delivering letters. So from the beginning, the founding fathers knew that there had to be a federal role in transportation. They federalized the water channels. They didn't want anybody to know the channels so that, you know, one state over another couldn't stop commerce. So from the beginning, the founding fathers' plan was, we've got to connect this great nation we had. And again, at 13 states, it was big to them. But now with all 50 sea to shining sea, I think over the years we've seen that, where whether it was in the waterway system with Jefferson and Madison, whether it was Lincoln with the Transcontinental Railroad, whether it was McKinley and Truman that forged forward on the Panama Canal that cut the time from east to west by sea, and then, of course, Eisenhower with the Interstate Highway System. There has always been a federal role. It's not to do everything. And, in fact, I believe, and I'm trying to pass legislation, have been trying since I've been in Congress, to reduce the red tape and the burdens the federal government places on our states. We have a responsibility to be a partner with our states and our local governments. And you mentioned earlier which mode of transportation. It's all modes of transportation we need. We've got to make sure, we passed a bill last year dealing with our ports and harbors and inland waterways, critical for our nation to be able to trade, export our goods that we build here, making sure that we have the rail connections that are very low cost, keeps many trucks off the road, but can get large quantities of products to and from our ports and into the interior of the country. Of course, our road system, not only is it for trucking, but, you know, passengers and people to everyday lives. And our committee also does aviation. Aviation is an interstate commerce mode of transportation, so the federal government needs to be involved in managing the airspace, as well as pipelines, which our committee has. The pipelines that travel bring large quantities of our energy and chemicals, a very, very safe way to move product. So all those modes of transportation are important, and we need to, again, make sure that we put a system in place that benefits all Americans. Because at the end of the day, you mentioned about everybody's involved in transportation. I believe everybody's in the transportation business, whether it's the trucking company, the railroad, or the airlines, to mom and dad getting to the store to get that milk that came by the transportation system and that cereal to get it home for the kids. So every morning when we get up and get that milk and cereal for the family, if it wasn't for the transportation system, it wouldn't be there. And we've got to make sure we're making those investments to keep the cost of transportation low, because if you don't keep it low, you pay for it in the end. The cost of that product is 10 cents more, a dollar more, $100 more. So again, I believe everybody's in the transportation business. It's the backbone of the economy, and we've got to continue to be focused on making sure we have the best system in the world, which we don't have today, and we've got to make sure we make those investments.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned it when you started by saying the three basic objectives of the federal government, and we seem to have gotten a lot far away from that. We're talking about all these benefits in terms of cash. When if a road isn't there, or a railroad isn't there, or even a telephone line, right. Fiber optic is part of transportation.
Sure.
So it's an interesting take. I do want to ask you a little bit about the rail. I, for one, really appreciate the service that Amtrak provides across Pennsylvania,
right.
And in particular the Keystone service, which is subsidized by PennDOT, I guess.
Right.
I have used that rail a lot when I lived in eastern Pennsylvania, and I recently went to visit my son in New York from the train in Altoona, which was, by the way, a very, very good service. Is there any way we could get that train coming a little more often to Altoona than once a day?
Sure. You know, that's been a struggle with Amtrak for the last 40 years or so. We passed in Congress, out of our committee, a passenger rail reform bill, passed it back in March before the tragic accident that occurred in Philadelphia. And one of the key principles we set on that was the only profitable line in the country is the Northeast Corridor from Washington, D.C. up to Boston. And they take and they dilute those profitable dollars and spend it all over the country. Well, one of our key provisions in that passed the House with over 300 votes, Republicans and Democrats, was to keep those profits on the Northeast Corridor. Let's figure out how we can get the speeds faster on the Northeast Corridor and the reliability greater so that people from Washington through to Boston are not flying planes. They're on the trains. And a lot of people say, well, if they want to fly, why don't they fly? Well, that's all fine and good, except the most congested airspace in the world is the Northeast Corridor. 70% of the cancellations or delays in the national airspace occur because of the Northeast Corridor. Many of it's weather related, but it's a congested corridor, and it has a tremendous ripple effect throughout the airspace. So getting less planes in the airspace and getting more people using ground transportation, trains and specifically trains, I think is an important thing for the nation.
I will tell you from personal experience, you can get on a train in 33rd Station in Philadelphia and be in Boston faster than you can fly in an airplane going through all the nonsense of the airport.
Yep, you're absolutely right.
That's just the way it is.
Exactly, and we can do it faster because those trains, those Acela trains can go 150 miles an hour, but they now average about 88.
Right.
If you can get those trains averaging 120 miles an hour, it's a 2 hour from D.C. to New York. It's 2 hours from New York to Boston instead of almost 3 hours.
So we've got 12 or 13 trains going to Harrisburg every day,
right.
And we have one going to Pittsburgh.
Right.
So what's the problem here?
Well,
is it inertia or
else? It's twofold. One, and you mentioned the Keystone service, which I've used going to Philadelphia. And 8 years ago, Pennsylvania, it's a state-sponsored line.
Right.
Pennsylvania has a say in that line, where it goes, how it's operated. Mm-hmm. They teamed up with Amtrak. They each made about $100 million investment. They reduced the travel time by about 20 minutes from Harrisburg to Pittsburgh, increased the reliability, increased the frequency of it, and now you have ridership up 80%. And I'm talking to the folks at PennDOT, which control the price of that because it's state-sponsored. They're getting close to breaking even or making a profit on that line. So we need to learn from that, and we need to look at other places in the country. Now, you mentioned Harrisburg to Pittsburgh. The topography is very different.
Sure.
It's pretty much flat going from Harrisburg to Philadelphia, so trains can get up to higher speeds. It's very difficult to get those train speeds up in the Pittsburgh to or Altoona to Pittsburgh. And also the ridership is about 58,000, 57,000 people. When in that Harrisburg to Philly, it was already somewhere just shy of, I think, 200,000.
But isn't that kind of cart and horse? I mean, if the service were improved,
right?
I believe the ridership would increase. I don't know what comes first, but
you're right. It's a chicken and the egg, the horse, the guard.
Right.
And of course, we're in a time of very, very limited dollars to do these. And so I think it's important to make sure you sort of do the marketing research first. will you be able to increase that ridership? Is the population there going to and fro? That's something we have to take a look at. But, you know, it's been something I worked with Governor Corbett. They were going to shut the line down. We were able to convince the state to up the ante, put a little more money into it, and keep the service going. And that's something we're working on.
Well, I'd be the first one with a sign out front if you did that.
Yeah, I understand.
Thank you very much for letting us know about that. It's just an interest of mine. And right. I think that anything can be done to improve that would be right. Terrific. Okay, more what's going on here in River City. Past couple of weeks, they've been talking about the local FBI coverage of the United States in the 4th of July right. weekend we just passed a few weeks ago, and the global war on terror. And do you think that we're in the right direction here? I mean, protecting people in Bedford County or Blair County or wherever you know your stamp of influence is, we're on a defensive mode here. I guess right. maybe that's what we should do. I don't know.
First of all, on a local level, whether it's Bedford County or New York City or any of our any town in this country, I think citizens need to be aware, be alert, because what we see with this ISIL threat, I think it's becoming apparent that it's more dangerous than Al Qaeda because they're recruiting Americans. I think the numbers of now, we've arrested 50 people in the United States that have been involved with recruitment or working with ISIL. You know, I think the best way to take this fight is take it over there, get them where they live so that they aren't able to come to America. And I don't think this president has been aggressive enough in going after ISIL. And I think it comes all the way back to this president's weak foreign policy, a weak policy on he drew a line in the sand in Syria, and then the Syrians stepped over it. The Russians saw that. The Chinese see that. ISIL sees that. They don't respect or they don't fear America. So you have the Russians doing what they're doing in Ukraine. You have the Chinese pushing out and creating with our little islands, creating bases on these little islands to say it's their territory, pushing out into the Pacific. And you have ISIL, you know, beheading people and just don't have a fear of America, don't have the respect of America. And I think we have to up the ante, and we really have to be strong. When you're fighting a war, to try to be humane like we would like to be, but when you're fighting an enemy that's not humane, it doesn't work. You've got to be aggressive with them, and we're just not doing that. And I think if we're aggressive, we will see less of these folks wanting to go over there. But our local law enforcement, our state and our federal law enforcement, the FBI, I think are doing a good job protecting us and going after. If these people were here in America, let's root them out. Let's arrest them.
Congressman Bill Schuster, I really appreciate you speaking to us. Did I miss anything? Anything you wanted to add here?
No. I just wanted to point out to the listeners that I do serve on the Transportation Committee, but I also serve on the Armed Services Committee, and I believe I believe those are two of the most important committees in Congress because they are constitutionally they're in the Constitution, talking about common defense, talking about interstate commerce, talking about establishing post roads. So that's why I'm on those two committees. Keeps me constitutionally consistent. And as you mentioned earlier, there's so many things we do in Washington that the Founding Fathers never intended it is. So I'll continue that fight to reduce those government agencies, send that decision-making power back to the states and the locals. And again, I just appreciate being on your show and being able to talk to your listeners.
Well, thank you. And keep focused.
All right.
This is good. Our guest today has been Congressman Bill Schuster of the 9th District. And Bedford County Speaks was brought to you today by DestinationDelco.com. To learn more about the wonders of Delaware County and the Brandywine Valley, visit DestinationDelco.com. See you again next Saturday right here on News Talk 1310 WBFD. Until then, have a great weekend. This is Lloyd Roach.
You have been listening to Bedford County Speaks. Listen each Saturday beginning at 8:30 to hear about the work, lives, and the lifestyles in Bedford County. Bedford County Speaks is a presentation of the News and Public Affairs Department of News Talk 1310 WBFD. Thanks for listening.